The following podcast is part of a certified educational activity titled Overcoming Challenges in the Treatment of Pediatric and Adult Patients with Uncontrolled Moderate to Severe Asthma, Comparing Approaches to the Use of Targeted Biologic Therapy with Experts Around the World. Access the entire activity and complete the post-test at peerview.com/AGP860. Downloadable slides and practice aids are also available.
Hello from my side, and welcome to episode number 2. This episode is dealing with the question, when and which patients should receive biologic therapy? If you consider the disease as we all perceive it as being rather heterogeneous, you will realize that patients obviously respond very differently to different treatments, be it biologic or non-biologic therapy. We know that. The underlying reason and the concept behind this is that obviously there is one part in heterogeneity that related to pathophysiology. People have different underlying mechanisms that drive their disease, asthma. And that relates into two large, you could see this here in these circles, into large areas of, on the one hand, phenotype. Phenotype being more of what you could see, what you can measure, sort of the things that are in your lung function, in your tissue, in your sputum, in your imaging, and an underlying endotype. An endotype being more, if you want, the background mechanism, the background information mechanisms, things that are not so easy to measure, things that you will not routinely detect in a given individual. So I think we as clinicians are more driven by a phenotype, and we understand theoretically the underlying pathophysiology, but the endotypical characterization of patients is something which is relatively new, and it very much relates to the indication and the reasoning behind using biologic treatment, which I will allude to in the next slides. So since the disease is driven, as we all know and we all agree on, by inflammatory mechanisms, inflammation in the airway predominantly, the phenotypic consideration would include cells that are related to this inflammatory response, and they can be measured in sputum, in experimental conditions at Broca alveolar lavage, even in biopsies. But there are also biomarkers such as pheno, exhaled nitric oxide, blood eosinophil levels, and things like allergic sensitization. I believe that for our discussion in this episode, the endotypes become more and more relevant. Because the endotype is really something that is, if you want, the overarching theme by which all these biomarkers are orchestrated, how they're driven, and how their levels that you can measure clinically are being determined. And what do I mean by this? We say here there is a type 2 endotype, or there is a type 2 inflammation, something that's been recognized by GINA for some years, and then there's something that you call non-type 2. Anything that is defined by the fact that what it isn't, you realize this is not so easy to be defined. But the type 2 inflammation that has been described excessively in the last years, the concept is actually quite clear. And this is what this graph alludes to. When we talk about type 2 inflammation, we understand that in the center of all this, and you see this in this little blue cloud, there are cytokines that are driving this process to a large extent. Namely, IL-5, that is responsible for the maturation and the generation of surviving eosinophils, IL-4 and IL-13. And we know that obviously through biologics that can address these cytokines, and we understand that if you cut them out, when you target them, when you sort of change their levels and their activity, that this has biologic consequences. Under the term of type 2 inflammation, and as an umbrella term, you will really understand that if you look at the biomarkers that I've been describing to you, it's the pheno, exhaled nitric oxide, it is the eosinophil, and it's the IgE levels. Then under this umbrella, a lot of different, phenotypically different patient populations can actually be gathered. And that gives it a very new way of stratifying asthma as a disease by endotypes. You have these cytokines if you want, as rain on the umbrella of the biomarker, be characterized in type 2 inflammation. And under that, you can have people that have different severities of the disease. They can have a late onset disease, eosinophilic, but they all fall endotypically under the same mechanism. One other part which is interesting, talking about umbrellas, this concept actually takes also into consideration that individuals that share this type of inflammation are not only relegated to asthmatic disease. We understand that other inflammatory components in patients, for example, on the upper right, chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps, but also atopic dermatitis, rare for us as pulmonologists, rather rare diseases as prurigo nodularis, all these individuals would share this common denominator of an inflammatory type that renders these people susceptible to A, interventions with biologics, and B, takes much more into consideration that people with severe asthma, difficult to treat or severe, that these individuals commonly share other comorbidities with them. So here you have a 35-year-old woman that comes for an evaluation of her asthma. She's been diagnosed in her 20s with a disease, but obviously she is not well controlled. She has two exacerbations within the past year. These require oral corticosteroids, so, you know, a step 5 type of approach. Despite the fact that she is on seemingly sufficient therapy with a triple of an ICS with LABA and LABA in an adequate dose, she also has needed bronchodilator responses. And it's been something that you would think phenotypically, this is a woman that has a normal weight. She's a BMI of 22. But she's just saying, I'm not happy with the medication that I have. It's something that's wrong with me. And this is the cases that we are being confronted with in this podium, and obviously you also that watch this program. So what we obviously do, and this is what we all do as doctors and nurses that care for these individuals, the first question is, if someone is getting the right medication, this seems to make sense, still being sort of symptomatic, is it really asthma? And we've been talking about this. I mean, it's very important to do that. The second point is, Dr. Bokhari has sort of pointed to this in the program earlier, very importantly, do they adhere? Do they stick with their therapy? Are they well trained? Do they know why they take it? Do they take it regularly? Do they take it the way we discuss it with the patient? It should be taken. And the next thing, obviously, and we do this, is we measure lung functions. We measure the pathophysiology. But what we increasingly do is we measure biomarkers. And these biomarkers will lead and inform us about the underlying endotypic change. And the biomarkers are the biomarkers that I alluded to. With the IgE level, it's the FeNO level. The level of eosinophils, usually in blood, because sputum is not regularly measured. So the biomarker panel for the endotypic categorization of our patients is coming much more into the picture of our clinical decision-making process to actually come to the conclusion which and what patients under what conditions should be treated by biologics as a non-effective deduction. So by having sort of alluded to this, where we moved clinically, I would just put this to our colleagues. So, Vasa, you've seen this biography of this woman, 35-year-old, obviously treated adequately. I would put to you, how would you manage her? I mean, you see these patients as much as we do. What would be your next step after what we've been debating, what we should do systematically?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. And that's an interesting case and showing us that she had an adequate treatment. And we presume that she's also compliant to the treatment. And now I think it's time, maybe if she wasn't using a LAMA, long-acting muscarinic receptor antagonist, maybe first I can add a LAMA to this patient. But she is using a triple combination now. So it's time to look at the biomarkers and phenotype this patient, because we know that severe asthma is a very, very complex and a heterogeneous clinical condition. So we need to deal with the combining biomarkers and then try to phenotype this patient and then decide which biologics we can prescribe for her.
Yes, I think you both very much agree on this, because that's why I alluded to, we have these three pillars, if you want. It's the IgE related predominantly in the adult to an allergic disease, but not exclusively. There are other mechanisms that could drive hyper IgE levels. It is this eosinophilia, I think we all agree on this. And most of us in specialized clinics will have X-Health NO measurements available, which is not ubiquitously available around the world. I think we can see this. But I see that Len is waving his head. If this woman would not be 35, Len, but it would be an adult, let's say, of 12 years, she would be female. She would be a kid that is suffering from exacerbations, and you confirm the diagnosis. What would you do to her, and how would you manage this, and what would be important for you?
Yeah, they're really important points, and you know, pediatricians have said forever that children are not little adults, because they're not. But what we often do is really in close alignment with what you and Arzu have laid out. We would confirm diagnosis. We would look for comorbidities. We would look for family challenges that may be impacting the child and family's ability to adhere to our regimen. Allergen-driven disease is especially important in childhood asthma. So an evaluation of the child's underlying allergic status and aeroallergen exposures may be helpful. Something I don't think we've touched upon, but I am increasingly pursuing, is a trial of maintenance and reliever therapy as opposed to just albuterol alone as rescue prior to considering a step up to biologic, because we know that a combination ICS reliever reduces the risk of exacerbation substantially and in some cases almost to the extent of the addition of a biologic. So in many patients, before I would make the next step to biologics, which is an appropriate thought at this point, I would also consider a trial of maintenance and reliever to see if that is the last sort of step in reducing exacerbation risk prior to biologic. I don't know what others sort of think about that or whether that was even implied in the case history. But my general sense is that still, especially in the U.S., albuterol alone as bronchodilator is the standard, and going to a maintenance and reliever approach might indeed be enough to get this patient into a more controlled state.
Okay, I just want to mention that I also support the idea of going with the MART approach before biologics, but for this particular patient, she's on triple treatment, so you need to give up on LAMA and go to the MART treatment and add on to your tiotropin. That will mix the things for this particular patient. But I totally agree with you trying MART's trial before biologics.
But in this setting, Arzu, would you replace the triple therapy with MART? Because the data on adding the LAMA is actually less effective in reducing the risk of exacerbation than MART might be. So I might, you know, switch to that prior to a trial of biologic.
If I make it in there, I think your point is well taken, Len, but I think the superiority of MART for our listeners, that is, if you want a demand way of looking at a dual combination in place of triple two combination continuously, I think the good data was shown in individuals that were milder than this patient. Our patient, 35, has two courses of oral corticosteroid use In the last year, a longstanding history of 15 years of the disease seemed to be quite okay in terms of taking a triple plus a rescue medication, which could be albuterol. And despite the fact, she said, listen, one of my biggest problems is that I use this rescue medication. But she doesn't really even so much complain about the exacerbation. She takes steroids for it, nota bene, but she's still not really sort of not controlled. This is why I'm asking you for the pediatrician part, because basically I think you would do this differently in chronic treatment already. You would sort of not give her a child of 12 years of age a triple therapy in the first place, would you?
Correct. I would most likely do a MARD approach before I would consider triple therapy.
I think that's the difference. I think that's obvious, and I think we would agree on this. Now, let me probe you both, if I may. So we have different biologic therapies, obviously. And let's assume that this woman is 35. She's not old, but she's not a child, but she's a young individual. She's a young adult. This young adult would have a pretty much elevated IgE level. I give you a 600 international units, and she would be eosinophilic with an absolute count of 580. So you have sort of, you have two biomarkers that could be type 2 inflammation, yes, but you have IgE levels in the younger individuals and a history of allergies, let's put it, and you have the other biomarker, eosinophilia. Which would be your target? If you use a biologic, which of the two, IgE plus allergy or eosinophilia, would drive your decision to give either or biologic? Len, I just put you on the spot.
Sure. So that's the essential conundrum that we find ourselves in. And I think we still don't have a great data-driven strategy to make that assessment, because we know that these phenotypes are often overlapping and coexisting within individuals. We know that in allergic individuals, targeting IgE is associated with a reduction in exacerbation risk. We know that in individuals with eosinophilia, targeting the eosinophilia is associated with a reduction in exacerbation risk. Many subgroup analyses of the biologics that don't directly target IgE have shown no difference in response based on your underlying allergic status. So to me, I think what it does is it allows you to understand all of the choices that are in front of you. And then you have to use a shared decision-making strategy with your patient, with their family, with the insurer, with the payers, based on your local environment, to determine which biologic would be an appropriate first choice, acknowledging that sometimes we don't get it right the first time, and that we don't understand which biologic effectively trumps which other in making that decision.
Well, thank you very much. I think this is one of the most diplomatic answers to that question I've heard. What would guide you in your decision, your treatment decision?
You're not giving us an easy case, because if we have a dominant biomarker, then it's easy. But now we have more than one dominant biomarker, so we maybe multiple elevated biomarkers. So then we can use both agents. But in this particular patient, we need to take into account the comorbidities and the patient factors. I can see that this patient is a woman in a reproductive age. She can be pregnant. So we have a safety data available for anti-IgE among all the biologics. So we have reassuring data for dupilumab, but the most data comes from omalizumab studies. And if there is a comorbidity in the patient, that could differentiate our choice according to this comorbidity, like the atopic dermatitis, chronic urticaria. I don't know if she has it. And also, as Len mentioned, patient factors and shared decision-making is so important. So the insurance health system even comfort level with the self-injection, working hours, distance from the clinic, and the demands of care for other medical situations will make my judgment for this patient. Still, it's diplomatic, right?
Yes, very diplomatic. Thank you very much. And I think that's been a very useful and a very clinical discussion. I thank you for sharing this episode with me. Thank you very much.
This activity is certified by PVI, Peerview Institute for Medical Education. Remember to download the slides and practice aids. Thank you for listening. Download materials and complete the post-test for instant credit at peerview.com/AGP860. This activity is supported by an educational grant from Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals.